I don't take it for granted to have the opportunity to get together like this. It's really, I know that's like an awkward time. Unplug that, please. Turn that off. I know that it's a slightly awkward time that, you know, to have this schedule like this, but it's really, for me, it's like processing. This is really like an opportunity to kind of just allow, I don't know, the transition out of Tisha B'Av back into the world with what we do. This is what Jews do. But I don't take it for granted that we have the opportunity to learn together, and that it means a lot to me. I think that it means a lot to Hashem also. I think it brings nachas to Hashem also. You know, after Tisha B'Av, there's people who didn't eat a whole day, didn't drink. People are schlepping around. And, you know, we also don't say Shalom Aleichem together to each other over the day. And we get to do that at Kiddush Levana tonight. And to be able to learn Torah in a way that we didn't have a chance today. Like we said in Eicha, Ein Torah. I hope this fills the void a little bit. Thank you, Shmuley. In Givat Shaul, a number of years ago, in Yain, Givat Shaul, that's a shout-out. Movie, that's a shout-out, Givat Shaul. Let's give a shout-out to Givat Shaul. Let's go to school in Givat Shaul. There was a tragedy in the neighborhood. A young mother who was very sick, Revitzin Weiss, and unfortunately, even though the whole neighborhood rallied and gathered together for davening and tehillim for weeks, unfortunately she was nefteres, and this is a terrible shock and a real shter to the community, and left a number of young children. It was just a terrible time. The Levaya, her husband was Maspid, and you can imagine the children, there's a whole family there. And her father, she was a Bas Kohen, Rebbetzin Weiss, and her father, Weiss, her father accompanied after the Hespedim, really just didn't accompany the Aron, but stood on the outskirts and listened. And then as the Aron was brought to her menucha, to her burial place, he was watching from afar. And you shouldn't imagine what that must have been, but he seems very preoccupied and kept asking. Like, there was a group of Kohanim and a couple of people there who were with him. A friend who was with him, just to be mechazik him, he kept, like, looking up and, like, catching himself and saying, like, where are they holding? What are they up to? Where are they holding? What's doing? Are they done? And the person said, no, I think they're still, the Chever Kedisha is still engaged in Kvura. And then a couple minutes later, again, he would say, you know, where are they holding? Are they done? Like I said, I'm not sure. I can't tell. And then, like, you know, they got a message from somebody, and he looked and he saw over the fence, and he turned to her father, to the father of the Nefteris, and he said, I think the Chever Kedisha is done. So he said, they're done? He said, yeah, I think they're done. So he stood up straight, he straightened out his jacket, the same jacket that he had torn Kriyan. And he says, Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam. Asher Kidshanu Mitzvasa V'tzivanu L'asok B'Divrei Torah. He said, Baruch Ata Torah. He was an Aninus, he was an Onein. He didn't say Baruch Ata Torah. And he said, "V'harevna Hashem Elokeinu, divrei sarascha b'finu, let your words of Torah be sweet to me." You can imagine what that was like for the people around him. "V'ni anachnu, and let us, v'tzetzainu, and our children, v'tzetzainu, our descendants, kulanu yodei shmecha v'lomdei sarascha l'shma." In the face of avelos, in the face of pain, in the face of hurt, in the face of death, we stare into the void of darkness. So there's one thing that's stable, that's one thing that's certain in the life of a Jew, is that ner mitzvah v'torah or. Torah is called ner l'ragli, dvarecha. The words of Hashem are like a candle, a light that illuminates our pathways. And the way that we go through and the way that we continue is only with Torah. In the face of Churban, Yeshayahu Navi asks, Yeshayahu Navi was like blown away what was going on. And he asked the question in Navi, Alma Avda Aretz, what, how did this happen? Like, how did it come to be that we lost Eretz Yisrael, that we lost the land? Churban Beis HaMikdash. Even the angels were baffled. Meaning that there was no answer. The Malachim didn't have an answer, the Navi describes. So in lieu of the Navi having an answer, and in lieu of the Malachim having an answer, every single like Night Seder Rebbe and Mashkiach and Yeshiva history make sure that we know this. The answer that Hashem Yisbarach gives, Al Avon Bittul Torah. Because of Bittul Torah, that's why the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed, and Avon Bittul Torah, that's why Alma Avda Aretz. Al Azvam Torasi, because they left my Torah. The Gemara Nedarim qualifies it a little bit. Gemara Nedarim explains that it's not just that Al Avon Bittul Torah or Al Azvam is Torasi. I think a couple of years ago on a Motzei Tishba, I'm remembering now, we spoke about this like at length. This happens. I don't like look back and like check the notes. Motzei Tishba is processing. This is therapy. This is just processing. There's no checking of the notes on Motzei Tishba. But Al Azvam Torasi, the Gemara Nedarim says that it wasn't the actual neglect of Torah. It wasn't that they were checking their phones during Shir or whatever. It wasn't that like we, you know, watch Netflix instead of learning. But Shelo Berchu Batorah Tchila. But that we didn't make Berchas HaTorah before learning. We neglected to make a bracha. And we learned. There was Talmud Torah. People lived the Jewish life. Like the Berditchev explains, the Kedushas Levi explains, a Jew is constantly thinking Torah. There's never a moment that we're not thinking about Torah. Like the brain works in such a way that like when we're deciding, like we pick up, you know, we go to wash our hands and like you make sure that the cup isn't wet, or you fill the cup and then go first on this hand and then on that hand, whether it's twice or it's three times. Meaning there's a whole sugya of Netilas Yadayim that we just reviewed before we did it. And when we contemplate, should I say this or not say that? Is it Lashon Hara? Is it Onas Dvarim? Is it Motzei Shemra? And we think for a second like we're reviewing all those two halachas a day and Shemir Salashon that we've learned. Like are coming back and like are, you know, popping in our heads to try to like filter it and figure it out. Whether we do or we don't, that's what's happening. And the same thing with making brachos in order. And the same thing with everything that we're doing. How we put on talis tefillin, how you light candles. Everything that we're doing is the result of reviewing it, even subconsciously, even in a split second. That's called Talmud Torah. We were learning Torah. But Shelo Berchu Batorah Tchila. We learned, but we didn't consider Torah something which was significant enough or important enough, sweet enough, beautiful enough, important to us enough to make a bracha. Meaning it was without reverence. without love, without wonder, without joy, without any connection to the nosein haTorah, to the one that stands behind Torah. Torah is Torah, but there's a nosein haTorah. Lacking that intimacy, the whole rubric, the whole algorithm of the kesher between us and Hashem, Yichud Kodesh Brichu and Shchinte, the Jewish nation and the land of Israel, it all just fell apart. It just dissipated. The glue just kind of didn't stick. There's nothing there to make it stick. Aruch HaShulchan points out, the Kevan Sha'omrim Ahava Rabba Havtanu, that because in our davening, built into our liturgy, we affirm our recognition that Ahava Rabba Havtanu, that Hashem loves us with a great love, or with Ahavas Olam, or the bracha of Ahavas Olam, an eternal love, which finishes with Habocher Ba'amo Yisrael Bi'ahava, that the eternal love that Hashem has for the Jewish people, that ends with Habocher Ba'amo Yisrael Bi'ahava, that God has chosen us, and that chosenness is expressed through Hashem giving us the Torah, that's called Zehu Birchas HaTorah Mamish. The Aruch HaShulchan says, Birchas HaTorah, literally Birchas HaTorah, is when we make that bracha of Ahavas Olam, Ahav Rabba, of Habocher Ba'amo Yisrael, Ba'avava Ba'ava, with love and with love. De'ein lecha Ahav Rabba, Va'ahavas Olam, there's no greater love and eternal love, Yoter, Menesina Satorah. There's no greater expression of God's love for the Jewish people, the fact that He gave us the Torah. I was at the Daf Yomi Siyam in 2005 in Yerushalayim, in Binyanei Umah. Anybody there? If you weren't there, I hope that you've seen the video of Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel. It was going around this year at the time of the Siyam. I think I watched it 1,000 times. If not 1,000 times, then more likely like literally 800, 900 times. Rav Nosson Tzvi made the Hadron on Shas Bavli. He was standing there. It was an English speaker's Siyam HaShas in Binyanei Umah. It was actually pretty awesome. The Holy Shiva. It was actually pretty amazing. Like, everyone had a big party in the football stadiums in New York, but like, we had Rav Nosson Tzvi in Yerushalayim, so whatever. And then went out to Shwarma and Halo Teiman, so really, whatever. But Rav Nosson Tzvi in that video, anybody, you saw that? You ever seen the video? It says, Hadron Alacha Talmud Bavli, and he, with his voice choked with tears, whoever heard such beautiful words? Whoever heard such sweet words? Hadron Alecha Talmud Bavli, Shas Bavli. Ein Lecha Ahava Rabba V'Ahavas Olam Yoter Menesinas HaTorah. Rabbi Ganak in his Hakdama to the Rav's Perush on Chumash, which is awesome, which is just awesome. He brings the Gemara in Megillah. Gemara Megillah describes one episode that when Yehoshua ben Nun was coming to Yericho, Yehoshua sees a vision. This is Navi. This is why Navi is awesome. This is why I got to learn Navi. Because every so often Navi resembles like the story from Shivchei HaBesht. Like the wild mises in Shivchei HaBal Shem Tov that nobody really learns Keseder. Dr. Benji donated a volume of Shivchei HaBesht. It's in the library. Every so often you can open it up, and if you're lucky, your heart will break and you'll open to a story about a werewolf or some thing where the Baal Shem Tov is like flying over the moon in a carriage. Literally, Shivchei HaBesht. If you learn Nachyomi or some form of learning Navi, see, every so often, if you're paying attention, really, like, it's wild. This is our written canon. This is canon, and this is part of our Bible. So the mice of Yeshua ben Nun is coming to Yericho, and he encounters the vision of a man in front of him holding a drawn sword. He doesn't realize that he's looking at a malach, at an angel. So Yeshua asks him, Halanu ata mitzareinu? Like, are you friend or are you foe? Like, what's the story? What are you busy with over here? What are you doing over here? What are you doing out after curfew? Like, are you with us? Or are you against us? Are you a friend? Our Litzareinu, you're our foe. Like, what's the story? What do you have with us? So this man that was really an apparition, because Nach could be like a sci-fi thriller sometimes. It's like, oh, it's wild. This apparition kind of like says to him, he says, Lo ki ani sar tzva Hashem atabasi. No, no, no. I'm a sar tzva Hashem. I'm a representative of God. I'm an officer from God. So then, hold on, Yeshua like understands that he gets into a stance, like, okay, there's something happening here. So the Gemara explains that really what's going on is as follows. That this Malach comes to Yeshua and says to him, as they were preparing to enter, to go against Yericho. Yericho is the key to conquering the entire land. Yericho is a surrounded city, a walled city. That's what the Meraglim probably saw when they said, whoa, 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 Eretz Ochelet Yoshvehi, this is too much for us, too much for us. He saw Yericho, he who controlled, Yericho controlled the entirety of the land, it was the key to it all. They were so busy in the military preparations, the Gemara explains that this Malach came to tell Yoshua, brother, you were so busy yesterday, you didn't bring the Korban Tamid. Yesterday you were so involved, you didn't bring the Korban Tamid, and today you're so busy with your preparations that you're mevatel the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. So Yoshua's question to the Malach was, halanu atayim l'tzareinu, was which of these two averos, the bitul korban tomid or bitul Torah, have you come to like judge us, to come deal with us right now? And the Malach answers, ata basi, I've come now. Meaning, the Gemara says, I've come now. Yesterday I didn't come. When you mevatel the korban tomid, when you didn't bring that sacrifice, listen, okay, whatever, things happen. You know, like, whatever. As much as we talk about consistency, in the end of the day, you know, the rabbi friend, Kevasa Echet, Taseb Aboker, Kevasa Sheni, Taseb Anarbaim, went out of style a few years ago. We let that go. I didn't come yesterday when you were Mevatel Korban Talmud, but Atabasi, now I'm here because you were Mevatel Talmud Torah, because you didn't learn today. And Shmuel Bar Arnis Gemara, that Yoshua understood from there that Talmud Torah is even greater than bringing Karbanos. And those Karbanos were there, Letzareinu. Those Karbanos were there to protect us from our enemies. Nonetheless, we learn from there, Ata Basi, I'm here, because Talmud Torah is even greater than that protection. Panavizharov explained, based on the pasuk in that Gemara, the Gemara quotes a pasuk. Ata kisvu lachem es hashira hazos. Ata, now, write for yourself this shira, referring to Shira Sazinu, but really, maybe in a broader sense, referring to Sefer Devarim, but in a broader sense, referring to the chiyuv or the mitzvah of writing a Sefer Torah, and by extension, all of Talmud Torah. That ata basi, now I've come, is connected to ata. And now you should write this shira. Panav Zhrov explains it because there's two elements in Talmud Torah. There's two aspects of Talmud Torah. Torah tziva lanu Moshe marasha kilos Yaakov. We have a chiyuv of learning Talmud Torah. Vagisa b'yomim v'layla. As my brother likes to point to the wall and reishit kihem chayenu v'oruch yameinu v'hem nehege yomim v'layla. Right? He points. Is our life and the length of our days. There's Talmud Torah. There's learning Torah. And then there's another aspect. And that's the aspect of relating to Torah as Shira. There's the kvias, the daily kvias of learning. I have to learn because I have to learn. Because that's what a Jew does. And Eved Hashem learns Torah. I have to know what to do. I can't, I have my, it's not the daf, it's the Yomi. Okay, whatever. Or it's the Nachim, or the Mishnah Yomi, or whatever it be. It's the need, it's the drive to fill our days and nights. V'agisa b'yom v'alayla v'tziva lanu Moshe, because there's a commandment, because that's what a Jew does. That's how we live. But like the Gemara Nedarim tells us, they were learning Torah during the days of Churban. They were learning Torah. But they didn't make a bracha over the Torah. Shlo berchu Torah tchila means that they're missing the Avaharevna. They're missing that sweetness. They're missing that intimacy with Torah. Recognizing that Torah, that learning Torah is ultimately about bringing us close to the Nosein HaTorah. We were lacking the Shira of Torah, the song of Torah. If Tisha B'Av is a day of Eicha Yashva Badad, of Ein Torah, so Motzei Tisha B'Av, when we're transitioning out of that alienated and alone space, so then we begin to feel, to fill that void with Talmud Torah. Because there is no tikkun, there is no fixing, there is no antidote to darkness more than light. There is nothing that can fill that existential loneliness in a person's life more than a relationship with Hashem through Limud HaTorah. The Noda B'Yehuda B'Cheskel Landau, the Tzion L'Nefesh Chaya, in his Drushim, the Shabbat Shuva Drasha, and the Drusha Yatzlach, quotes the Gemara that says, Miyom Shecharav Beis HaMikdash, from the time, from the day that the temple was destroyed, Ein Lo LaKadosh Baruch Hu Ba'olamo, Ela, Arba Amos Shel Halacha Bilvad. God has no place in the world, in the shifting sands of moral relativism, in a world that's constantly reassessing what's good and what's not good. The place where we could find God in this world is in the Arba Amos Shel Halacha Bilvad. It's a place of stability, of clarity, world of halacha. Says the Noda B'Yehuda, consider that the Noda B'Yehuda was not so excited about chassidus. He continued to graz chayrim on chassidus and doubled down on it. And doubled down even on the Kabbalah of the Kabbalah that had trickled into people's lives. It was pulling the pendulum away from anything that shmecked of anything other than like old school learning Torah, frontal engagement with Ribbono Shalom through Torah. Says the Noda B'Yehuda, Mi shemekadesh belimudo makam l'shchina, if in the course of our study, in the course of our Talmud Torah, whatever it is that we're learning, in the course of that limud, if we are makdish, if we set aside, or we sanctify, or we focus, or we intend, that this engagement with text, you're learning Navi, you're learning Halacha, you're learning Kabbalah, you're learning Torah Shebal Peh, Torah Shebal Tav, whatever it may be, you're learning the little Midrash says. Whatever part of Torah we're learning, Shnai Mikra, or the non-gray box parts of Baderech, the person in the midst of that, I was waiting, it was hard, I had the microphone for 6 hours today, I didn't push product at all, I'm like, I'm dying for it, I'm sorry. Well, if it's crunch time, it's crunch week. No, it's like if I don't, it's now or not. If in the context of learning, in the course of learning, whatever we're learning, in the engagement of that text or that idea, we open ourselves to recognizing that at that moment we're bound with the Nosein HaTorah. Creating makom l'shchina, sham timtza manoach rav va'atzum. You'll find a great place called manoach rav va'atzum, a place of menuchas hanefesh. An awesome sense of comfort, of place, of belonging. Not just learning Torah, but making a brocha on learning Torah. And then in the context of limud, opening ourselves to the reality that Hashem is with me here. Not just that Hashem is with me here. I've given HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, a place to be revealed. V'im ha-makom dachuk v'katan, and if that place that we create, the Noda B'Yehuda says, is dachuk, is tight, and it's small, it's just a minute here, a minute there, or it's perhaps it means, I don't fully understand, I can't tell you over the sugya, or I don't fully understand like how this works with like Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni and Yad Soledet Bo, and I don't fully get exactly what's going on in this sugya at all. I got Ein lahakdesh ela makoma v'shaito. Va'ata simu alev ich biyadchem adaver lahazman ashchina etzlechem. Recognize that even if that Torah is in a small place, in a narrow place, or in a place which is with incomplete understanding or clarity, That moment and that place, open your heart and recognize that we have the opportunity lahazmin hashchina etzlechem, to invite the divine presence. This is not like some jubu, like new language of like post Brene Brown Yiddishkeit of our generation. Like this is lahavdil oda b'Yehuda. We have the opportunity to invite the Shechina to join us in the experience of textual study. V'im tilmadu l'chavana zo, and if we learn Torah with that kavana, kama rav scharchem, how great is our reward. Asher I efshar l'shayer klal. This is not Sichas Haran. V'im katon hadavar be'inav, and if this is something which is like insignificant, or you think like, well, who am I, or how can I actually do this? Recognize davar gadol hu be'inei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That even for a moment, and even in something which is small, we're creating a makom for the Shechin in the world. We're binding ourselves to God in this world. And davar gadol hu be'inei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's something which is awesome and great in the eyes of God. It's a halach in Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch says, Birchas HaTorah tzarech lizayir ba me'od. To be very careful with Birchas HaTorah. Because Birchas HaTorah is the key to it all. It moves us from a world of Tzivalanu Moshe, like the Panavishar Rav is saying, to the world of Kisvu Lachem Ashira Hazos. It's the rhythm and cadence of the life of a Jew. Not just the how-to. Michel Ber Weissmandel, Zechuso Yogein Aleinu, also say Hashem Yikom Damo. Even though he survived the war, he died of a broken heart. Mrs. Khan, Dvorah Khan, if you ever catch her at a moment where she's free and you're free, ask her about her experience as a young woman, as a young girl with her Michel Ber. He was a tzaddik and a Talmud Chacham, Oiberlander, also an expert in manuscripts. He was one of the most tragic figures in recent Jewish history. His book, his kinnah, he wrote a kinnah called Min HaMeitzar. It's scathing. If you want to sleep well or you want to digest what you've eaten, it's not a book to read. That's not. It's not. If I want to feel comfortable about life choices, it's a Tisha B'Av afternoon read. Parts of it, not the parts where he calls, where he accuses, well, Motzei Tisha B'Av. It's translated, the parts that could be put into print that would not be too disruptive to people's existence was published as The Unheeded Cry. He saved countless Jews during the war. But he was unable to convince others. He understood what was happening. He knew what was happening. And he tried desperately through all of his contacts in libraries where he had studied manuscripts and community members and people. He wrote letters, countless letters around the world, begging people to pay attention to what was going on, about deportations, about liquidation of Jews and the final solution. And it fell on deaf ears. In 1944, he escaped a train that was on its way to Auschwitz by sawing open the lock on the cattle car, on the car, with like a wire that somebody had secreted into the train in a loaf of bread. He took this little wire and he sat there digging at it until he popped the lock on the moving train, and he squeezed himself out of the train, and no one followed him. He broke his leg in the process. And he ended up hiding in a bunk Bratlava for the rest of the war. His family was murdered. His family was completely killed in Auschwitz. Min HaMeitzar is like this heartbreaking, infuriating, also very confusing, like description of his trying to alert the world, governments, most painfully Jewish organizations, maybe even more painfully members of the Zionist leadership. Tried every which way. He was advocating bribery, ransom, to bomb the tracks in Auschwitz, and it fell on deaf ears. as I kind of like melted into the floor this afternoon, I fell asleep reading. Like he just over and over again would scream like how can you go about your business? How could you go about your business as if your brothers and sisters are not being burnt in ovens? I mean, he used explicit language. How could you eat and drink and continue to go about life? How could you sleep at night? The only other thing I've seen in print in such a way, maybe there are more, but it was Meir Kahana, who was after the fact, with real indictment, talking about Jews sitting on the beach in Miami watching the sailboats being sent back to Europe for the Jews to go back to the ovens. After the war, Reb Michal Ber was broken, shattered, suffered from depression, physically a wreck. But he came to the United States and he rebuilt with all of his kochos the Nitra Yeshiva in Mount Kisco. And that's where Mrs. Khan used to go for Yom Narayim. Her father would go to Davin. He suffered the weight of destruction of European Jewry and his poor health and depression. He ultimately died of a broken heart in the mid-1950s. There's his drushos, his last drushos that he gave are just beyond. You can't breathe reading them. Rabbi Lopiansky quotes them in his farm sometimes, but not for now. But in the midst of the war, just to understand this person, in the midst of the war, while he was hiding in a bunker, he ultimately needed to go from place to place. He was on the run, and they told him they found a place for him that he'd be able to hide with a family called the Stern family. When he arrived there, after months and months and months in this bunker, his untreated broken leg was infected. His face was completely swollen and scarred. He was starving. And he came to their house, looking like he came from the dead. Mrs. Stern describes how she opened the door and she saw Reb Michal Ber. And she said, "Please come in." And as he walked in the house, the first thing he started looking around, and he said, "Do you have a Gemara? Can I take a Gemara?" He said, "Do you want a bathroom, a drink, something to eat? Do you want to wash yourself? Do you want to change your clothing? Do you want to lay down? Do you want to eat something hot?" He said, "A Gemara, please, just a Gemara." And Reb Michal Ber sat down, and for 4 hours, he was hunched over a Gemara, didn't move a muscle. After 4 hours of not even looking up, he turned to the Baalat HaBayit and he said, "Yatz bin ich gekumen zu sich. Now I've returned to myself. Chazarti l'atzmi. Yatz bin ich gekumen zu sich. I'm back, I'm here. I've returned to myself." There's no darkness that can't be illuminated by the light of Torah. And there's nothing that can illuminate a darkness like that if not Torah. Gemara in Gittin, Lo karas HaKadosh Baruch Hu bris im Yisrael, ela b'shvil Torah shebal peh. The entire covenant of the Jewish people rests on Torah shebal peh. Going to be color war here on Sunday, friends. We're going to have a Hachnasa Sefer Torah here on camp on Sunday. You know that? The last Sunday of camp, Shabbos Nachamu, we're having a Hachnasa Sefer Torah. The Sefer Torah is being dedicated by a family of Ohavei Torah, of Ohavei Yisrael, in memory of their parents, their grandparents, Rabbi and Rebbetzin Bamzer, who were fighters for Torah, were lovers of Torah and lovers of the Jewish people. That's going to be Sunday. That's next week. That's going to be awesome. Sunday's also going to be Color War, which is going to be phenomenal. We're going to talk about it probably at the staff meeting tomorrow night. I was with Reb Daniel. Okay, first of all, the wreck in Camp Pass, this is an infomercial. Get ready. If you want to go to the bathroom or get a drink, now's the time. I'm just kidding. The recreation here in Camp Pask is so Toradic, it's wild. Everything here is Torah Shebal Peh. Everything here is Midrashim. All the activities, all the themes, everything is A to Z, simple with Torah. So I don't know if this is official, don't tell Uri, but the teams for Color War Sunday, can I say it? Am I going to ruin it if I say it? Will I ruin it? I don't know. Don't tell, if I'm not allowed to say it, don't say that I said it. But the teams for Color War on Sunday are going to be Torah Shebal, Torah Shebichtav, and Torah Shebal Peh. Come on, where's Rabbi Yaakov Gibber? How are you over there, right? Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebal Peh. Your job is to find somebody here who doesn't know Torah Shebal Peh and explain it to them, and maybe they can become the next great Marbitz Torah in Klal Yisrael. But I want to give credit. Who was the one who thought of that in the first place? They say it was Alan Pervin. According to legend, Alan Pervin, Zolzayin Gesund, was the one who came up with that, which makes this even greater, you understand? The themes of Torah Shebichtav and the themes of and Torah Shebal Peh. So Reb Daniel came over to me this week, and he said, like, I just want to clarify a couple things about Sunday, the Hachnas Sefer Torah. First of all, I'm pumped about ending camp with Hachnas Sefer Torah. I think it's awesome. Because really, the end of a Torah is just the beginning. Le'enei Kol Yisrael, Bereishis Bara Elokim. We roll it right back. We do a Hakafos. It's a circle. It never ends. Camp Pask, no Torah. It's awesome. The symbol, you know, the symbolism, the medrash of it, the idea of it, the optics of it, the pekalach, the Sefer Torah truck, the Chai Riders. I mean, the whole thing is going to be. It's going to be a party, friends. But he came to ask a serious question. He's like, we have Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebal Peh. I shouldn't talk about it? Oh, it's too late. Did I blow it? I'm sorry, I blew it. Okay, whatever. This is what happens. There's no notes. Motzei Tishma, we're not looking at the notes. Motzei Tishma, we wanted to know the colors. Should I not tell you the colors? He asked about the colors. We have the colors. So he asked me about which color should be for Torah Shebichtav and which Torah should be Torah Shebichtav. So I said, really, you're asking a question that's based on the Pardes Rimonim. Really, this is a question for students who are learning Kisvei Ari, who understand different aspects of revealed and concealed, written and oral law and color. I'm like, I think that we should, like, you should consult the Shvilei Pinchas. To be continued. I'm sorry, I'm getting the eyes both from Ahuva and from Shira. I have to stop. L'koros HaKadosh Baruch Hu Bris in Yisrael al b'shvil Torah Shebal Peh. What color that'll be, we'll have to see. You have to stay tuned. Herman Wouk was, besides for being a Pulitzer Prize winning author, he was close to the Lubavitcher Rebbe, which is much more awesome than winning a Pulitzer Prize. Winning a Pulitzer Prize is kavod, but I mean, he was close to the Rebbe. He was able to get in. They called him, his name was Chaim Zelig. He used to give a shir. The Rebbe gave him shlichus to give shir. They had a decades-long personal relationship. And as I remember, has everyone read This Is My God? Or we don't read anymore anyway. If This Is My God is not a Netflix series, but This Is My God is one of the more important works written in the last half a century about the relationship between Klal Yisrael and Torah, and about how what God expects of us, and how to relate to our relationship to Ribono Shel Olam. He wrote it in the process of becoming someone who's Shomer Torah Mitzvos, Pulitzer Prize winning author. Down to earth, like a real handbook of relevant Yiddishkeit. His description is so powerful. The Talmud is not only an encyclopedia of law, but a work of folk art. Here, Amitai, it's a work of folk art. Beautiful way of describing it. A hymn to the Lord rising out of many generations of men who spent their lives in the quest for Him. This quest for God, the confident search for the holy in every busy detail of life, is its grand single theme. The Talmud recaptures a long golden age of intelligence and insight, and is to this day the circulating heart's blood of the Jewish religion. The circulating heart's blood of our religion. A hymn to the Lord. It's not just a commandment to learn, to do, to know what to do. But it's the expression of our quest for being close to the Ribono Shel Olam. And in the face of challenge in the face of darkness, of difficulty. Like David HaMelech said, Lule Torascha Sha'ashuai. Were not your Torah my delight? Sha'ashuai, my delight. Not just my objective reference point or baseline for stability in the world. But Lule Torascha Sha'ashuai. Were not your Torah my delight? Azavarti ba'ani. I would have perished in my affliction. My suffering would have overtaken me. Rabbi Elazar Shach, there are few among Jews in contemporary Jewish history who are more singularly focused on Limud HaTorah and everything that comes along with that singular focus than Rav Shach. The inability to learn Torah was like Gehenim for him. Tisha B'Av was Tisha B'Av because he couldn't learn Torah the way he usually learned Torah. With incredible poverty in Mesiras Nefesh, and he was starved, almost died numerous times throughout his youth because they didn't have what to eat. And he would just throw himself into learning. Before the war, before he came to Eretz Yisrael, before he became the Rosh Hashiva in Panovich, while he was in Vilna, right just after the outbreak of the war, his 14-year-old daughter, Mirla, passed away. It was a tragedy that he never got over. Like we're describing last night, grief that accompanies. Rav Shach was brokenhearted for the rest of his life over his daughter's Patira. She was 14 years old. Till his last day, on his nightstand next to his bed, was a picture of her. He once said that, you know, all he needed to take with him was Talis Tefillin, a Gemara, and a picture of his Mirula. On her yurt site, it was like Tisha B'Av for him. On her yurt site, it was before the war. It was the very end of Reb Chaim Ozer's life in Vilna. Reb Chaim Ozer Grudzinski, the head of the Vilna based in the Gadol Hador. On Mirla's yurt site, Reb Chaim Ozer came to visit the younger Reb Shach to be mechazakim. And Rav Shach said that, you know, he understood Imo Anochi Betzara, because Reb Chaim Ozer himself had lost his daughter. She was a young woman engaged to be married. She was attacked by a wild dog. She was killed. Rav Shach would describe the nechama that the Gadol Hador provided for him. He came and sat. He sat quietly for a little while until he turned to him and he said, "You should know that the only thing that gave me strength to wake up in the morning after my daughter was taken from me was learning." He said, "I never understood pshat until my own daughter left the world. Lule Taraska Sha'ashuai Azavarati Ba'anyu." And then he got up and he left. Rav Shach described what Rav Chaim Ozer told him on that first yard site when he came back. He told him a mashal. He said, "There are two prisoners, both of them wearing their prison garb, unkempt, unshaven. One of them looked totally tzebrachin, totally broken, looked like the life had been sucked out of his eyes. He just looked there like a zombie. The other prisoner who was standing right next to him, in the same jail cell, had a little bit of jump in his step. He was smiling. He was even able to like joke around a little bit." So the Reb Chaim Ozer explained to him, "What's the difference between these two people?" He said, "The first one was sentenced to life sentence. The first prisoner, who looked totally shattered, no hope, he had a life sentence. But the second one, knew that his prison term was ending in another couple of days. He saw the light at the end of the tunnel. Shach said to him that everyone in this world, in one way or another, has their own pekels and their own prison. Every single one of us is going through some form of galus, personally, nationally. Everyone suffers hardships. But someone who's connected to Torah, someone who has a relationship with Torah, someone who has a kesher to Limud, knows that they're not a prisoner for life. Knows that whatever that darkness or pain is, will be able to confront that darkness with the light of Torah. He'll at the end of the day, have their Seder. They'll have something to learn. Their Nachyomi, their Mishnayomi, their Dafyomi, their something. Something that will tap us into that koach called Sha'ashuai, that delight that can resolve all of the affliction. It's late. I'll tell you a ma'aseh of Reb Chaim Brisker. Reb Chaim Soloveitchik was the revolutionary of Torah. He changed the whole way the world learns Torah and thinks about Torah. And in his life, he wanted more than anything else to be known as a Rav Chesed, as somebody who was a Rachman, whose life was dedicated to taking care of other people and healing their pain. So the stories we hear about Reb Chaim are stories of him adopting children who were left at his doorstep, children born out of wedlock, stories of how his home was like the original Machlis living room, like he literally paskened about his own home, that it was Rishus HaRabim, like that if you left something there, it was Hefker, because like the amount of people that would come through their house. Reb Chaim also had a tremendous fire, tremendous clarity, not just intellectually in learning, but in the role that Torah has to play in the life of a person, in the life of a Jewish community and of a society. In the beginning of the 20th century, probably 1908, 1909, in Russia there were gzeros that the government imposed on the Jewish community. Different threats regarding curriculum and the chinuch system. So the Rebbe Rashab organized a kenes rabbanim, a gathering of rabbis. And Reb Chaim Soloveitchik of Brisk, Reb Chaim Brisker came to that kenes, to that gathering of rabbis, to that place. He wasn't like big on, he wasn't a big public speaker. We were talking earlier about Reb Chaim Kanievsky, a person whose life was learning. He was an intellectual. He was a masvid, he was a Rosh Hashiva. You know, it wasn't like on Meaningful Minute. It wasn't being interviewed for, you know, Inspiration for the Nation, talking about his life stories and the resilience that he has or whatever it is. I mean, he was a Rosh Hashiva. Cheftza, Gavra, an intellectual. But he came to the rabbinic conference to meet with the other rabbanim there and to try to come up with solutions, to like figure out, okay, what are we going to do here with all these pending or impending gzeros against chinuch, against yeshivas, and against like chadarim, like what are we going to do? And they asked him to speak. So reluctantly, Reb Chaim got up and shared the following words. He said, "Rabosai, I'll share a story. You can imagine like Reb Yechiel Spiro getting up and telling a story already. I'm here for it, right? Like that Rav Weinberger is going to end with some knockout story. Okay, you know. But to have Reb Chaim Soloveitchik from Brisk get up at a rabbinic conference and drop a maisa already is something different, you know? It wasn't Shal Shudis. It said as follows. There was a Jew who was a salesman, who was a merchant, who was traveling around, and he would go place to place. And throughout the week, he'd go do his thing, and then he'd go home for Shabbos. One day, he gets to a certain city, to a certain place, and he goes into the local dry goods store, the local makolet, to get himself a little bite to eat, something to eat. And he sees that there's like a young man there who's like, you know, stocking the shelves, or he's like plopping around a little bit. I don't know exactly. He's like moving things around. He's hocking around there. And he goes over and he takes this little bag of tomatoes, and he taps the fellow on the shoulder, and he says, how much for the tomatoes? And the kid, without even turning around, says, drei. Three. He says, okay. Then he goes over and looks for the bag. He takes a little bag of cucumbers. There's like, you know, two cucumbers in there. And he says, Entschuldigung, excuse me, how much for the cucumbers? The kid barely turns around. He says, drei. Three. He says, okay. Anyways, he's traveling and he's going to a meeting, so he realizes he has to like polish his shoe. Polish his shoes up. So he goes over to like the other part of the dry goods store, and he takes off this little container of shoe polish. And he goes over to this guy again. He says, Schuldig, excuse me, how much for the shoe polish? Yeah, the guy doesn't even give him time of day. He says, drei, three. He's like, okay, this is strange. And as he's, you know, looking to see if the polish is going to match his shoe, he realizes that the bottom of his shoe is loose. He needs like a tack, like a nail, to fix his shoe with. So he goes over to the area in the hardware store and the dry goods store, and he sees that there's like a bag with like a nail in it. So he says, okay, he goes and says, Schuldig, excuse me, how much for the nails for the masmerim? The guy says, drei. He's like, okay, this is crazy. So he goes, just looking around, and he goes to like the back, there's like a little room there, and the shopkeeper, the owner, the balabait, is sitting there. And he says to him, listen, I'm just passing through here on business. I don't mean to butt in over here, but it seems to me that like you have a little bit of a problem with the young man who's working in the front of your store here. You know, every single time I ask him how much something costs, he says drei. Like, is it possible that nails and tomatoes are the same price, and shoe polish and cucumber are the same price? So the store owner says to him, I appreciate it very, very much that you're concerned. Just let me just explain. Like this, a bunch of years ago, I got into some problem with taxes. It's a long story, but I ended up in a lot of trouble, and I was facing a jail sentence. And I found a tax attorney, somebody who had really like had good ksharim and knew the lumdus of being a tax attorney. So, thank God he helped me, and it saved my life. Otherwise, God knows, I'd be in jail now. They would have lost my business, my family would have nothing to eat, and I'd be in prison. This tax attorney was like the best guy, saved my life. And I offered him anything. I said, like, tell me, like, what could I do? And he says to me, listen, money I have, you know, you paid your bill, and thank God I have no shortage of clients. But here's what I really need. I have a son. My son is deaf. He can't speak. He's mute. He can barely see. I he sits at home all day. I have nowhere for him to be. This was before the days of inclusion programs. No ComHab. It was before Mrs. Khan opened up a program for people with special needs. This is in Europe. He said, there's nowhere for my kid to be. Do you have anything you could do to like maybe help him? So the storekeeper says to this traveling guy, he says, I figured to myself, you know what? I'll give this guy a job. I'll figure it out. I'll give him a job. I'll bring him to my store and let him help me schlep. I realized he couldn't schlep. I try to get him to stock the shelves. He couldn't really do that either. Like, he doesn't really understand, and he can't really hear or talk. And he's like, really doesn't. Tried to figure out a way to give him a job to help him be here. So I went through all of my goods, and if like a kilo of tomatoes is 6 kopecks, so I make a bag of 3 tomatoes of half a kilo, so that it should be, you know, only 3 kopecks. And I took the shoe polish and put it into a container. Instead of it being 18, I made it, whatever, that it'd be just 3 kopeck worth. And I sat for weeks and weeks and weeks and taught this boy to just say drei, three, drei, three. You tap him on the shoulder, he'll turn and just say drei. You walk up to him and you snap your fingers in his eyes, he'll just say drei. So I took the cucumbers, and if cucumbers are like 10 kopeck for a kilo, so I made it that it should be just three cucumbers. I took like 300 ounces and put them in a little bag so that the measurement of everything in the store is equal to three. And that way, he has a place to be. And that way, I could do a little bit of business. I could sell one nail and a bag for three, and I could sell a bunch of tomatoes and a bag for three. But it's the only word that he knows. It's the only word that he could say. Chaim Soloveitchik turned to everyone there, and he said, Moriv Raboisai, I'm blind, I'm deaf, I don't know anything. I can't tell you what to do with these gezeiros against the Russian government, how to handle the pedagogical challenges and the funding issues and the curriculum. I don't know anything. I don't hear, I don't see, I don't understand. There's only one word I know, Torah. Torah. Ask me what we should do, Torah. Ask me what we shouldn't do, Torah. Do you want to know? You can decide whatever you decide. But if you ask me for my vote, you ask me for my opinion, there's one variable for us to consider, and that's Torah. The mission of us tells us, Kach hi darcha shel Torah. This is the pathway. Pas b'melach tochal, to eat bread a little bit with soil, to mind b'meshura tishta, drink water in a rationed water, v'ala aretz tishan, to sleep on the ground, v'chaye tza'ar tichya, and live a life of privation, of tza'ar. And with all of that, uva Torah ata amel, engage in the study of Torah. Labor, invest ourselves in the study of Torah. And if we do that, the Mishnah quotes a pasuk from Tehillim, Ashrecha v'tov lach. It'll be good for you. You're fortunate. Ashrecha b'olam hazeh. You're fortunate in this world, and tov lach in olam haba. But is this the way we live? They asked Rav Meir Shapiro from Lublin when he was going around fundraising for the yeshiva. He was going to put a laundromat and a fresh bakery in the yeshiva, that the bachurim should have clean shirts and good food to eat, and a dormitory, not just sleep in the front of a store and eat Essenteg as night watchmen, and build a gorgeous campus with a beautiful library and a comfortable space. Or like my brother said, with mattresses and air conditioning. And someone said to him, Kachi darcha shel Torah? This is the way of Torah? What about the Mishnah? To eat bread and salt and a little bit of water and sleep on the floor and live a life of privation. Rav Meir Shapiro said, now that's not pshat Mishnah. That's not how you read it. The Mishnah is read. Kachi darcha shel Torah? This is the way Torah is lived? Pas b'melach tochal? This is what a person who's living a life of Torah should have to sleep on the floor? Should live a life of privation and bread and water? Chalav advash, tachas lashonech. They should have all of the delicacies. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make comfort in the world if not to support Torah, if not to enable Dalet Amos L'Shechin in the world for His glory and His covenant to be revealed through Limud HaTorah? That's the pshat. But He built the heck of a yeshiva. Rabbeinu gives pshat. Rabbi Nachman gives pshat. I'll leave you with this. Rabbeinu explains, Kach hi darcha shel Torah. Not that we can't drink Powerade and a properly dated Diet Coke. And not that we shouldn't enjoy $400 piece of meat in Shmod's smoker. And not that we shouldn't have a comfortable place to sleep and room temperature controlled rooms, proper air conditioning, and be comfortable so that we can have clarity of mind. That's not for us. But kach hi darcha shel Torah. This is what it means. For us to ask ourselves the question, what in my life am I ready to sacrifice everything for? To give up all of everything, all of the good tastes and everything in the world, all the delicacies and all the treats, to just subsist on a basic minimum of bread and water? Is there something in my life that's so important that I'd be willing to give up everything and live a life of privation and sleep on the floor and have barely what to eat? Is there something in my life that's worth giving up the comfort and luxury and convenience that I'm ready to sacrifice for? In other words, what's my one word? What is it that I'm? What is it about my life that's a core value? Clarifying that, Ashrecha v'tov lach. Then we have this world and we have the next. Lulei tarascha sha'ashuai. Come out of a Tisha B'Av, out of such a state. I have to come out with a renewed commitment. We talk about Mesiras Nefesh and all those who died al Kiddush Hashem. That's not what we're being asked to do, Chas V'Shalom. But to live al Kiddush Hashem. To live al Kiddush Hashem, to live as Jews, not to die as Jews. But to live as Jews, to live as a Jew means to live a life of Torah. Not just learning Torah, but Birchas HaTorah. Not just Tzivalan Moshe, but to reveal the Shira, the song of Torah. The Vaharevna, the sweetness of Torah. The rhythm, the cadence of our life, the symphony of our lives is the song of Torah. May Hashem help us that we have the strength to return to ourselves. May the bitterness of Tisha B'Av be sweetened by the sweetness of Torah. May the darkness of Churban be illuminated by the light of Torah. May the distance and the alienation of Golos be replaced by the intimacy and the connection of Torah. And may our exile be replaced and be saved, be fixed by the redemption of Torah. And Golos were not ourselves. Gula means a restoration of self. It means to return to ourselves. Hashiveinu Hashem Eilecha v'nashuva. Should never be that we have to go through anything like that anyone goes through, such suffering. But v'niyeh anachnu, us, v'tzatza'einu, kulanu yodei shemecha v'lomdei sarasecha l'shma, should always live with the sweetness of Torah. And Mirtz Hashem, we should be able to lilmod olamei lishmar v'lasos alakayim, it's called divrei Torah zos.